All right. I'm going to take some questions in a minute. There's a couple of things first. I was chatting to somebody the other day when we were talking about doing hypnosis as part of like a therapeutic procedure. And there's a bit of resistance around the idea of hypnosis, both in terms of like whether it was a legitimate thing to be doing, whether it even exists, and whether it would work on the person. And this is like the fifth time I've had this conversation in the last 3 weeks. And there seems to be a bit of confusion about what hypnosis is and what it isn't. Why it's got such a bad rep? Well, pretty straightforward. The way it's represented, it's just too tempting for storytellers, for filmmakers, to not turn it into something that it isn't, because the idea of it is cool. Like that you could take over somebody's mind and they would be just like a zombie who would obey you and do whatever you told them to do. That's theatrical. That's got some theatrical merit. That's like, you know, that's a cool idea. It's like for years when I was a martial arts instructor, and that was all I did was teach martial arts, particularly focused on street self-protection, like what really works instead of the fancy flowery martial arts stuff that isn't going to help you in a barroom brawl or if you get dragged up a back alley late at night at all. And I would get so frustrated, and then I'd be like, well, no, the reason why people think that martial arts is this magical thing where the laws of normal physics and biology no longer apply, which is very common, even amongst adults, even amongst trained adults, even amongst trained adults who have experience of violence, real, like real world experience of violence, more than I do. I was shocked to find we're extremely naive. Those people I was working with who'd been in, you know, more than one firefight with guns where people have been killed, which is nothing like any of the barroom brawls I was ever involved in. And their naivety was huge because even though they've got an experience of violence, the martial arts went into a certain slot in their mind because of what they'd seen in films and on TV and read in books over the years. Similarly, psychology goes into the same slot. I tell people I'm a psychologist and they'll be like, oh, can you read my mind? And I'll go, no, I totally can. It's magic. And hypnosis is the same. So you have things like you have a cool film like The Manchurian Candidate. I like the original and I thought the remake was okay too. And numerous times hypnosis has come up in films, and the way it's spoken about in mass media is it's like your brain switches off, you're given a piece of information, and then you go and do it. So people are like, oh, that sounds gross because I'm not going to have any sort of consent. And also it sounds outside the realm of what I believe to be true. So it's both gross and unlikely to be real at the same time. I don't want anything to do with that. The truth of hypnosis, I think, is on the one hand, it's disappointingly dull. It's actually a very disappointingly dull truth to it. Once you've got past the massive letdown of what hypnosis actually is, I think you can actually start to use it as an everyday tool and be aware of where and when you are having hypnosis used against you. So, what is hypnosis? Hypnosis functionally. And other people may disagree with me and say, no, that's not what it is. I've seen this, I've seen that, or the way I was taught it is blah, blah, blah. I've even had an argument with trained hypnotherapists about this. Hypnosis is nothing more than entering into an altered state of consciousness that usually we call trance, or you could call it daydreaming, or you could be call it being switched off, not in the most alert beta brainwave state imaginable. You're kind of a little bit tuned out and you're in a zone. And that zone is usually somewhat focused. And when you're zoned and you're focused and you're enjoying what you're doing, you bring more of your attention to it. And as you're giving your attention to that one thing, you can find that, like, I don't know, your foot falls asleep or you stop noticing that pain in your shoulder that was there all day. Suddenly you just don't notice it anymore. And your attention, your conscious awareness, your the sort of the theater that is constantly running, the cinema that's running in your mind, is now showing only one film instead of showing seven different films on the same screen, splitting the consciousness. It's got one film and you're focused on that. So all a hypnotherapist does is encourage you to go into an altered state of consciousness. And then once you've gone into an altered state of consciousness, and we're not talking like DMT, mushrooms and LSD here. We're like, oh, I'm walking around and I'm externally focused. Oh, I got a text. Oh, this text is about an argument I had last week. Boom, you drop into a trance. Might be good, it might be positive, but it can also be something that has an unpleasant, negative emotional state to it. Suddenly the outside world disappears. You're walking along the street, you're aware of the traffic, you're aware of the people, the birds singing, you get this text, you look at it, and you go, ooh, and you switch into a trance, which is the argument that you had last week. Or you get a text from somebody you really like, and you switch into a trance where you remember the really good time you had with them last week. It's as quick as that. So as I'm talking to you, in order to sit and listen to me, you're in a slightly altered state of consciousness. You're in a slightly relaxed, tranced out state, and you have single-minded focus of attention on whatever it is that I'm saying, or you'd be thinking partly about what I'm saying, and then your own thoughts and ideas about what I'm saying. So as I'm saying things, you'd be going, is that true? How do I know that's true? I don't think that's true. I had this experience. It was... That's called a trans-derivational search. So I give you a piece of information, and the unconscious goes, where does that fit into my currently existing map of reality? And if it doesn't, it's going to get rejected, which is a deletion. If it does, it will be distorted and re-put back into your map of reality, which is why people consistently tell me that I've said something that I totally haven't said. But it's they're looking to take what has been said and fit it into their map of reality. And if it doesn't match properly, it needs to be warped in order to get slotted in. So this is called a process of distortion, deletion, distortion, deletion, and generalization, which is what our brain needs to do in order to cope with the plethora of stimuli that it's receiving on a second-to-second basis. So what is hypnosis? Relaxed, altered state, single point of focus. You're focused on just one thing for a period of time, and then it goes in a certain direction, and that's it. Well, that's fucking boring, isn't it? Who wants to do that? How is it that a lifetime worth of trouble with one problem, with one thing that you've never been able to fix, and you read books and you went to seminars and you even went to therapy for it and you couldn't fix it, but then it got fixed by this silly process where you sit still and somebody talks to you and they invite you to think about the situation in a different way, or to put new ideas and new data and a new pattern in place? How could that? That's so easy. That's so simple. I think in the times where, even when I've sort of had this debate with people and then I've convinced them that actually hypnosis did work, what they actually do is they go, oh yeah, that did work, but that wasn't hypnosis. And I'll go, no, that's hypnosis. And I go, no, it wasn't. The argument I had with hypnotherapists, they disagreed that there was any such thing as conversational hypnosis. The whole of the Spartan Life Coach YouTube project, the YouTube side of it, if you feel like you got actual healing from watching the videos and listening to me tell dumb stories about stuff that wasn't relevant, that is proof that conversational hypnosis works. All of these things, pattern interrupts, bizarre ideas that stick with you, colorful imagery, reframing of metaphors, all of these things are there to instill a sense of hope, a way of thinking that you can look at a situation in a way that you've never looked at it before and try new things and do new things, and things can be very different for you in a way that you've never imagined possible. So hopefulness, instead of there just being like, I can only do X or Y and X sucks, so now I have no choice, I have to do Y. You open up in the brain, you open up the neuroplasticity, which is why sometimes the silly stories go in, why there are discordant ideas thrown in. It's actually an effort to break up the typical patterns of thought to induce some neuroplasticity, because another element of hypnosis, as I was describing before, is if you're a good hypnotherapist, then you need to understand how to talk to the client's unconscious. And the unconscious has a specific language. And you can't just say to the client, don't feel bad anymore, you know, because it's bad than that. You don't need to feel that way anymore about these things. You can feel differently, like that probably won't work because the unconscious doesn't process content massively well. Content language is the language that we speak is symbolic representations that point to a greater reality. The unconscious tends to deal with context-based language. So metaphors, rituals, legends, archetypes, that's the language of the unconscious. Actually describing what you want the person to do in detail, if you're a hypnotherapist and you're working with a client, isn't going to work very well unless, instead of just describing it to them, you get them into a relaxed state and then you have them visualize and imagine in the first person as though that is already happening to them, this is what you will experience. So when you put it in the first person and in the present moment and make it vivid and impactful and inspiring of emotion, and you associate it and link it to their highest values, their goals in life, where they want to go, and you can show them and go, hey, you know, because you really only ever want to be talking to the unconscious of a client. If you talk to the conscious mind of a client, you're going to be in a fight because that's kind of what the ego is for. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. A good, healthy ego is a boundary, is a place where we say no, where we refuse that which comes in, like a cell. You need a cell. There's all your vulnerable stuff inside. And then you need a cell wall that keeps stuff out. So the ego loves a no. And that's okay. That's a good thing. We should be encouraging people to say no and to set ego boundaries and to say no to others and to set ego boundaries with themselves and to say no to themselves. You can say no and smile. You can say no to yourself and feel good. You can say no to others and feel good and not have a dramatic scene unfold. You can say no and not go into an emotional flashback. You can say no and stay in a good state. So when you're, if you ever try and use hypnosis in a therapeutic or a coaching context and you're talking to a client and you're going for the conscious mind, you're going to get a lot of no's because they'll be like, what the fuck? This doesn't, what you're saying doesn't match. No. Doesn't match the model of reality that I currently have. So how could this possibly be the case? So it's kind of like a way of bypassing that conscious, the conscious mind, the ego-based conscious mind, and showing the unconscious. My advice to anybody who wants to use it or is considering learning self-hypnosis, think of yourself, if you're using hypnotherapy, as being a film director, as being a novelist. And one of the rules of good writing is show, don't tell. Show, don't tell. So if you want to show that your hero is brave and intelligent, put her in a situation where she uses her courage and her intelligence to escape that situation. And that tells the audience, this character is brave and intelligent. If another character comes into the room and says, oh, Colonel Anderson, you are both brave and intelligent because of the thing that you did the other day. This is poor writing. That's called, it's called an excess of exposition. You don't want your characters just engaging in exposition and going, ah, you're brave and so clever. Because the audience is going, well, that's shit. Why don't you put her in some cool scenario where there's danger and conflict and we can root for her and she can demonstrate her value on the way out? Similarly, with hypnosis and hypnotherapy, or whether it's self-hypnosis, you want to show the unconscious rather than tell the unconscious. If you want to, let's say, for example, you want to be more cheerful and you want to be more disciplined in your life. You want to be more disciplined, more boundaried, more cheerful, and more able to take on responsibility with optimism and a good stoic attitude. Okay. If you have a hypnosis that goes, you feel more responsible, you do discipline now, you take on responsibility with stoicism, that might work for a certain, that will work, sorry, for a certain portion of the population, but that's because they have certain character, personality traits that makes them respond in a certain way to authority. But for most people, that won't be as effective, sorry, to respond positively to authority rather than telling authority to F off. And be like, no. He's like, you are more disciplined. No, I'm not. Go away. Whereas if you show the unconscious by going, okay, now imagine vividly, if you can, how cool it would be over time if over the next week you've just suddenly found yourself acting in a way that was more disciplined, that let you have more time, that let you get more things done, that had you feeling good about yourself. And then imagine vividly right now how it would feel inside your body if you felt optimistic, if you felt hopeful, if you felt excited, if you felt good. If over the next week you were just in a really good mood and you've been disciplined and you're getting everything done and you're taking on responsibility and you have a good attitude about the whole process and so on and so forth. So you actually put the client, kind of like an audience member, in the seat of the experience, rather than saying you're going to feel disciplined. You actually put them in the seat of the experience and have them live that ahead of time. What does that do neurologically? Well, I've said elsewhere, and I got this from other people from long ago. Some of this is like stuff from positive psychology from like the 1950s. The brain is a question answering machine. So your conscious mind is a question answering machine. And it will say, like I say, the brain is a question answering machine. And all of you just went, is it really? How do I know that it is? Oh my God, I'm asking questions. Oh my God, he's telling me that I'm asking questions. Can he read my mind right now? Yes, I think he can. So you get these questions and these answers. The unconscious, because the unconscious kind of, well, I mean, you'll end up going into like a philosophical debate that there's no end to it. We don't really know what consciousness is and we don't know where it is. So we can only say, well, it kind of seems to look like this. The unconscious seems to be closer to what the brain does holistically. So when you're getting dreams and that's a reflection of the unconscious, that's the way your brain makes sense of reality holistically. What your conscious mind is doing, what you're thinking with right now, what I'm speaking with right now, is pretty piss poor compared to the supercomputer that's going on. It's like using your smartphone when you have like some giant supercomputer at NASA behind you instead. The difference in the capacity to process data is huge. So the conscious mind, they reckon, again, this is psychology of consciousness and the psychology of awareness, which is extremely problematic. They reckon, the psychologists reckon, and it seems to be true, the conscious mind can hold about 7 pieces of data under clinical conditions at any one time, +2 or -2. So depending on your levels of stress, how much Adderall you took that day, you might be able to take 5, 7, or 9 pieces of data with your conscious mind. The unconscious mind, you've got researchers out there claiming it's 1 million bits of data per second. So let's say it's 10,000 or 1,000 versus 7. It's still huge. So what the unconscious does for speed and for survival, because the unconscious and the brain aren't as fussed about whether, you know, the fact that you love vanilla ice cream versus caramel crunch really says who you are, about what kind of a person you are when it comes to like human rights and your political leanings, you know, that all of that is just ego. That's why we call that ego stuff. That's the story of the self. You know, your socks, your favorite musician, your favorite whatever it is, that's all just ego. The unconscious and the brain is trying to map territories. That's what it's predominantly about. Emotional, psychological territories. If you dream about houses, you're probably dreaming about mapping an emotional territory. It might be your own emotional territory, your own psychological territory, or the emotional and psychological territory that you're trying to get across with another human being. So what it does is it draws complex equivalents. So it goes, this is like that. And then the brain makes a neural connection. It goes, this thing is kind of like that thing. And it does it at the speed of electricity. It just goes ding, straight away. This thing is like that thing, faster than I could say it. This thing is like that thing. This thing is like that thing. What he's saying now is like this thing. Well, that's going on over there. Well, this thing is like that thing. And this thing is like that thing. Why? evolution, just so that we can keep eating berries and avoid saber-toothed tigers and not die horrendously or starve to death, or, you know. So it's fast. Because of a lot of complex equivalence that goes on at the unconscious level, what we need to be focused on really is trying to build neural pathways. So the other element of hypnosis that's kind of dull and kind of makes it rather pedestrian, quotidian and everyday and non-mystical and non-magical, but I think that's a good thing, is it's kind of like training. It's kind of like going to the gym. So if I put you into a trance, and I am not a 20-minute trance induction guy, I'm the guy who says, sit down, take a nice deep breath, close your eyes and listen to the sound of my voice. And for most people, they're so overstimulated with advertising and marketing and noise and people and smartphones and social media and everything else, they're just like, oh my God, yes, sitting down and not just nothing but just one thing I need to do. And I'll just be like, just tell yourself to relax and I breathe. And that's all the trance they need. It takes 10 seconds, 15 seconds max. Now you're in a deep enough trance. And the rest of that precious time I have, we're going to be you in the driver's seat and me taking you where we have agreed before we began that it is that you want to go. So you want them creating new neural pathways. You want the client to be creating new neural connections. Well, how do you do that? The optimism and self-discipline thing, you would want them to do it 4, 5, 6, 7 times. After about the fifth time, most people get it. Like the unconscious goes, oh yeah, that's cool. Yeah, I'm going to do that. That's the direction you're sending us in, is it? We're going over there now. You want more discipline because discipline is a good thing and having boundaries is a good thing and it makes me feel good. And I like to feel good because when I'm feeling good, that means I'm more likely to survive. And when I'm feeling bad, that means I'm less likely to survive. So feel good is good. So go over there. What's over there again? Well, we just showed you. You see yourself going through a period of time, maybe a week. Most of us can imagine what the next 7 days will look like. Take it up to a month and it's a bit like, ooh, vague for a week. See yourself being a bit more disciplined, enjoying it, feeling optimistic, feeling hopeful, getting things done, feeling good about yourself. And then you would have the client feel really, really good, feel really, really confident somatically inside the body, that space between emotion and physicality, wherever you feel good. Everybody feels excited, hope, optimism in a slightly different way. You generate those feelings. You have the person vividly imagine, as vividly as they can, which is usually vague and little bits of video that, or GIFs that like flash through. And some people have color video, some people will be black and white, some people will be close, some will be far away. This is all standard neurolinguistic programming. All of those things are called internal representations. I don't play with them that much because I just tell the person where I want them to go and I let them figure out the details. So I'm kind of like, I'm trying to be the director and the author, but I also know that really you need to be the director and the author. You know what's going to take you to that emotional place and that psychological place better than I do. So I need to create the space in which you can fill in the gaps in this virtual reality experience that we're moving through together, consensually. It's very hard to do this stuff non-consensually, but I'll come to that at the end. You do it 5 or 6 times and you're starting to lay down a new neural pathway. And then what will happen is every time the person sits down to listen to you doing the hypnosis or you do it for yourself, you already feel good. It's like, well, I haven't done anything yet. Why do I feel good? Why do I feel relaxed? Because whatever we do a lot of, we get good at. We're skill building machines. We're repetition machines. It's why you've got to look at your habits and be really careful with what you let yourself think and feel and say and do on a daily basis. Because all of the psychology research and all of the spiritual teachings that we've been given for the last few millennia say the same thing. Whatever you did today, it's highly fucking, tried not to swear for the entire time. See, that's a poor boundary issue. It's highly likely that you're going to keep doing that. So whatever day you had today, the chance of you repeating that tomorrow is more than 80%. And the chance of you doing that day that you live today again in a year's time is more than 70%. If you didn't have a good day, you need to make some changes. You need to make some serious deep changes now. Don't wait. Don't think that some mystical force is going to come in and magically make everything okay. It's just us. This is just the challenge of being a human being. It's not the most fun thing in the world, but it's not the worst thing in the world either. It's something to be aware of. You know, unless we are pushing outside of that comfort zone. When we talk about the comfort zone, we're just talking about the repetition zone. We're talking about what we're already skilled at. You will want at your most basic level to stay within the range of what you're already skilled at. You don't want to go outside of that because you'll associate that, neural associations, complex equivalents, with danger, with stress, and with the potential for suffering. And guess what? It's not just the potential for suffering. You push outside your comfort zone, the suffering's fucking guaranteed. He swore again. I have an issue. Swearing Tourette's, that's what it is. The suffering is guaranteed. And that's why it's probably best, sooner rather than later, to accept it and go, you know what? Some of this is going to suck. Some of this is going to be quite hard. But it's already hard now. So it can either stay being hard like it is now, or I can push through and things can get better. And at least the suffering is moving me in a certain direction, which is the direction I want to be moving in. So back to repetition, just like growing a muscle, you need to let yourself know 5, 6, 7, 8 times that this is the direction that you want to be moving in order for it to stick, in order for the unconscious to go, oh, okay, this is the direction you want me to go in. That's fine. When you do that and the job is done, whatever it was that you were trying to get done, my last point would be like, please give credit where credit is due. Give credit to the process. Give credit to the hypnotherapist, because that's when the ego will creep back in and somebody will come up to you and go, hey, you know, you went and did that hypnosis stuff. That worked for you? And you'd be like, nah, not really. Well, you stopped smoking, right? Yeah, I did, but that was pretty much just my decision. But you, nothing to do with the hypnotist then? Nah, I don't think that stuff works. I just decided to stop. I've heard that so many times. I'll see them like a year or 2 years later. And they'll be like, yeah, I don't know whether it worked for me, but I just decided to stop. You totally didn't stop for the 30 years before I spoke to you. And you had tried everything you told me. You told me you tried everything and then you stopped inside of a month, but it's nothing. Okay, hypnosis still doesn't work. Again, like I started this out, like if it doesn't match your map of reality, you just delete it. You'll just go, that's not nonsense. That's definitely not what it was. Oh, I said I would finish on consent. Outside of a prison camp where there are human rights abuses going on and torture and your food is being controlled and drugs are being issued to you and, you know, horrendous conditions where there is a huge amount of non-consent, it's very hard to get somebody to do anything that goes against their value system. All the psychological research and the experimentation has indicated this to be true as far as hypnosis goes. These are only suggestions. And that's why there are books out there called Hypnosis, The Art of Suggestion. That's what a hypnotherapist is supposed to do. Say, sit down, relax. Maybe you could feel more confident in social situations. Now, I'll do my Paul McKenna voice. Now, what I want you to do is go inside and relax. Think about a time where you felt really good. And imagine yourself in a social situation feeling confident, strong. It's good, that. Paul McKenna, he was radio DJ first. And there's still a little bit of smashy and nicey that comes through there sometimes when he's doing his hypnosis. I've trained with Paul a couple of times. I've trained Richard Bandler a couple of times, specifically on hypnosis now. And it works. Why is the world not revolutionized by hypnosis if it works? Well, I think basically because people don't do it. I mean, I've put out free material where you can listen to it and it will hypnotize you into not feeling the way that you've been feeling. And people still don't do it, even if it's free. And I think, again, it's just outside of the scope of what they think is true. So as far as non-consent goes, unless you've been locked away and brainwashed by people who had total control over you, like you need to be in like a prisoner. And even then, I wouldn't. You know, Manchurian candidate scenario, assassin type scenario. They even played with it a little bit in Homeland. with the Daniel Lewis character. And, you know, they talk about being traumatized and, you know, because of the trauma, that's why he switched sides and blah, blah. And I'm like, no, there's no way. It's just, it doesn't matter what you do to a fully grown human, to a fully grown adult with a formed ego, you're not going to get somebody to walk into the White House with explosives strapped to them, no matter what you do to them. Because as soon as they're away from that danger, as soon as that pressure's gone, they'll be like, well, thanks God for that. I'm not doing that shit. So, yeah, that also probably added to the crazy mythology around hypnosis too. Okay, I'm going to see if there's any questions that people have regarding hypnosis. Anticle says, I do your stuff for approximately 2 years and I feel better every day. That's good. Visualizations and manifestations. Yeah. Everyone imagine he has taken his top off. Now, come on. Come on. Sarah Clark, could you hypnotize someone into using your hypnosis? Yes. I can use the hypnosis. Feel good now. Okay. If anybody has any questions regarding hypnosis, now would be a good time to ask them. A question should always have a question mark. Can the hypnotist make it so the person starts barking like a dog if they deny the hypnosis? No, they cannot at all. You'll have seen people doing that. That's what stage hypnotists do. But the truth of that is that it's massively a consensual experience. The stage hypnotist goes through a process where they sort for the most extroverted and attention-seeking, probably histrionic people in the room, out of a room full of, let's say it's 200 people, should get 5 or 6 people who are really good. 10 people who volunteer, so that they're self-selected for extroversion. They want to go up on stage. They know it's stage hypnosis. They know they might be asked to cluck like a chicken or bark like a dog, so they want to do that shit. And then what the hypnotist, I don't know much about stage hypnotism, but I know this much, will then do is they'll test them for impressionability. And they'll say, we're going to test you now to see how susceptible you are to hypnosis. And actually what they're testing them for is what their levels of social restraint are and how drunk they are and how much they want to be the center of attention in that moment. So you take your 10 people who are self-selected and then you walk up behind them, you go, now you'll go into a trance, now sleep. And if they really drop down and they really go along with it, then they really want to play the game. The whole thing is a game. It's a consensual game. They're not barking like a dog or clucking like a chicken because they don't want to. They're doing that absolutely because they want to. We are not the creatures that we pretend to be. And also there is something trance-making about being up in front of a group of people. Looking for questiones. Oh, my Skype is on. Let's just turn it off. It's very annoying. Okay. Okay. Alfredo says, how do you protect yourself from unwanted hypnosis? I don't watch any advertising. I'm a complete weirdo. I'm totally eccentric. If I go to the cinema, I try and time it so that I miss all the adverts. This is how loopy I am. And if they come on at times, because at times I have actually put my fingers in my ears and just looked at the seat in front of me instead. Partly because I just find advertising so incredibly irritating. But also because I don't consent. I don't consent to that going in there. Nobody asked me if I wanted it to go in there. I don't want it to go in there. You can shove your car advert right up your bottom. And that plinky plonky music they keep playing now, it's so popular. Like a grown woman singing in a child's voice, playing one of those tiny little mandolins. I just loathe all that stuff. Drives me crazy. It doesn't matter if it's a car advert, an advert for a smartphone, bloody toilet paper. It's the same thing every time. And the reason why is they're trying to say to you, Everything is okay. Dee dee doo doo, you be a little child now. You just act like a kid and do as we say. God, it's awful. God, I just hate it so much. Just block it out. And if you are in a conversation with somebody and they want to bring the conversation to things that you don't want to talk about, like if you're talking to somebody and they're talking a lot of hate all the time, or a lot of frustration all the time, or a lot of depression all the time, just avoid them. You can't afford to be around somebody for hours and hours and hours who is a loser. You can't afford to be around somebody for hours and hours and hours who's just full of hate and full of negativity. Don't do it. They will gladly suck up all your milkshake, but you cannot afford it. It's conversational hypnosis is very, very real, Pink Elephant. Can hypnosis be conducted via Skype with a hypnotist? Probably. Beata says, infantile advertising, it's cupcake fascism. Never heard that before. How can we trust the hypnotist? Well, trust the human. If you've tested them and you think they're a trustworthy human being, then you'll be fine. And if they start saying something weird during the hypnosis, just never go back ever again. Can we get the presentation of the hypnosis seminar you did a while ago? Yeah, I was supposed to release it last Wednesday. Didn't, too much work on this week. But I will release it Monday. Thanks for that question. What do I think of MK Ultra? Ooh, that would take us off. I need another 40 minutes to talk about MK Ultra. A smoking hypnosis. There are other ones out there. There's tons of smoking hypnoses out there already. I can do it if people really, really want it. Hypnosis is gaslighting. Kind of. Gaslighting, I suppose if you were like the hypnosis part of narcissistic abuse would be the words that they consistently say to you and the way that they treat you, which kind of falls under the thing of gaslighting. Yeah, I guess so. Hello from Portugal. Hola. Do you offer hypnosis audio products, please? Well, thank you for asking. Yes, just head over to spartanlifecoach.com and look at my products there. I recently tried NLP audio tapes to self-hypnotize to promote weight loss, only to find out I keep it on, presumably the weight, to protect myself from intimacy and fear of sexuality. What do I do? Oh, I actually have a hypnosis audio that I did for a weight loss group specifically on that, because I think a lot of people who struggle with weight loss are actually keeping the weight there as a barrier, as an extra level of boundary to an external dangerous world. And yes, to make themselves appear less attractive so they don't attract, this is all unconscious, so they don't attract predatory sexual types if their trauma and their pain was sexual or caused by, or they were told it was caused by their attractiveness. MK Ultra, dude, seriously. What is MK Ultra? Go Google it. Someone asked about the difference between meditation and self-hypnosis. Can you answer? Well, in hypnosis, where we have a direction, so full disclosure, I'm a meditation snob. So I only consider it to be meditation if you're talking pure Buddhism, Zen, maybe transcendental meditation, which is emptying of the mind. Everything else is a self-hypnosis or a visualization. So if you are imagining Kali and you are chanting to Kali and you're imagining something in your life happening, or you're doing the kind of Pattaya chants and meditations, though they're called meditations, to me they would be better labeled visualizations or a kind of self-hypnosis. So self-hypnosis visualization has a content and a direction and an end goal. Pure meditation is the detached observation of the observing mind, engaging in pure awareness, just being present. And there's very little, it's like an undoing. So self-hypnosis is still a doingness, whereas meditation is a non-doingness. What are the consequences of bad NLP with hypnosis? I don't know. If you like a bad NLP practitioner, probably just bewilderment and feeling awkward and uncomfortable. I've seen bad NLP practitioners at work It's just awkward. I don't think it would be catastrophic. I think what would happen is you'd just be like, "Ugh, that was really shit. I don't ever want to do that again." They do. I remember watching a guy. He actually tried this with me during the seminar as well. God, it was so creepy. He was doing something where he was touching people's hands, and he hadn't asked permission to touch their hands first, and then he wanted to do a process with me. And I was like, okay, but I'm not into that hand touching thing. And, he still, was anchoring me by whacking me. It was really didn't feel very calming. I thought I had my eyes closed and it goes like that. I'm like, geez, the spike of adrenaline. And then he took my hands and was stroking them. And I was like, you have no idea, because you haven't asked, if anybody in the room is the victim of any kind of like sexual abuse, but this shit, don't ever fucking do that. So that was bad NLP. That was really, with my eyes closed as well. I'm like, I want to choke you until you gurgle. Stop stroking my motherfucking hands. So much for not swearing. Therapy sucks, says Reza. No, it shouldn't do. It shouldn't do. Does NLP help with phobias? Yes, absolutely. Probably the best thing it's for is phobias. I get vertigo and now fear of flying. Yeah, NLP should help with that, absolutely. Can you recommend any books on self-hypnosis to get rid of fear of intimacy? No, none that I'm aware of. Can hypnosis wear off? Does it need more than one session? Yes, hypnosis will wear off. It is only the same as any kind of conditioning. So like if you work up to doing 100 push-ups or something and then you leave it for 6 months, it's going to fade. Like the body, the brain, the human system will tend towards the conservation of energy, and it won't keep doing something unless there's a reason to keep doing it. Sarah Clark said, I've started doing your park bench zen. Is good. Yeah, park bench zen is the shiz. Alfredo says, so it's justified to aggressively get away from people that say things that take your subconscious to places you don't want to go. No. It's justified to charmingly, lovingly, compassionately remove yourself from the scenario firmly and assertively with good boundaries so that these people don't take your subconscious to places that you don't want to go. But there's no need to make a mess, and there's no need to get wound up about it. You just opt out, just vote with your feet. Would hypnosis help with abandonment anxiety? Never tried it. Abandonment anxiety, that's a really good point actually about hypnosis. Abandonment anxiety, I always immediately start going, oop, CPTSR, oop, childhood trauma, oop, borderline personality disorder. There is literature out there. Obviously, I can't remember who wrote it or even the titles of it. That was saying that it's actually some forms of therapy are really bad to use or can be catastrophic to use with certain personality types and personality disorders. Borderline personality disorder was one. And then for a lot of reasons, I think you shouldn't use hypnosis for borderline personality disordered people or people on the cluster B spectrum. And you might say, is that because it wouldn't work? I think there's a chance it would work way too well. But also that because borderline personality disorder, in order to get that diagnosis properly, you should be on the borderlines of full-blown psychosis, which is a total abandonment of reality. We've got to be very, very careful with moving people's imagination in that kind of a way. Would it help with the general abandonment anxiety, the way that somebody feels when they have CPTSR? It could do. I don't see why not. There isn't really anything that I don't think... You know, if it affects your mind and your emotions, then hypnosis should be able to help with it. Lee says, will hypnosis open us up to demonic influence? No. If you're worried about that, why don't you ask an angel to protect you first? I do get a little bewildered by people who are obsessed with demons and black magic. And I'm like, if you live in that reality, why do you people never talk angels and white magic? Like, why is it all? Like, I lived with somebody. It was a while ago. Obsessed with ghosts, obsessed with demons, and quite a religious person, a Muslim. You never pray to, no. I'm like, maybe. If you live in that reality and you're worried about demonic influence and you believe that God is stronger than the devil, I'm moving into Jordan Peterson territory here. You're kind of acting like half an atheist and half a religious person. If there is darkness, there must be light. If there is evil, there must be good. Do you live in a world in which the devil is stronger than God? Does that make you a Satanist? Just as much as people are worried about demons, all that time and energy that is focused on demonology and the black arts and all that could be focused on angels and prayers and white magic. That's not my belief system. It's not what this channel is all about, but you know, like, use your own logic. Follow through with your own logic. Once you start talking about demons, the internet connection gets fucked up. I know. I saw it. let's all think about angels and light, and ask the Archangel Michael to fix my internet. If it totally works now, right the way through, you know that the angels fixed it. How about psilocybin for an altering trip? I don't know. I mean, psychedelics, it's popular at the moment to talk about psychedelics and their use. I know that there are authentically respectable clinics that are apparently having great results. I did use when I was younger LSD quite a few times, and I'd say don't do it. Just stay away from it. But you know, to each their own. My official party line has been since day one and will continue to be, don't use psychedelic drugs to try and fix long-term trauma. The potential for inducing psychosis is not great. It's quite small, but it is there. Like, it's, I don't know if it's proven, but there is a growing body of research that psychedelics can induce. There's even a condition now. Who was I talking to? Oh yeah, I know who I was talking to in the last week, where her mate had gotten into a state from taking LSD. And I was saying to her, oh, I'd just come across a few days before that, I don't know, Psychology Today or somewhere, saying that there's actually a term for it now. It's psychedelic psychosis induced personality disorder or something like that, where you actually end up doing what they think could be permanent damage. So I'm not a big fan. And I'm not sure that I learned much more from taking psychedelics than I would have got than just chatting to people, reading books, listening to good lecturers, putting good information inside of my mind from good, well-intentioned people, and taking long walks in nature and giving myself the time to think. I'm not sure that I got much more than that. So I actually came up the other day that my last psychedelic experience was, well, I think all of them were kind of spiritual in nature. And it was just psychedelics get real repetitive. We are the creatures of the Garden of Eden. This is the DNA. Look at the DNA. Look at it. Look at it. Look at the snake. Look at the snake eating its own tail. We are the creatures of the Garden of Eden. And then it was just tumbling down the walls. And I was like, all right, I probably was done with this show after about 5 minutes. We did 10 hours of that. We did 10 hours of that just over and over and over again. And I was like, by the end of it, I was like, wow, yeah, LSD is kind of repetitive. But then some people tell me they've had amazing experiences on LSD where, you know, the loving light at the center of all things infuses their entire being. I'm like, I got a lot of religious stuff. I'm particularly consider myself a very religious person. A lot of religiously stuff. Plant-based medicine is different from LSD.
Okay.
I guess everybody should do what they think is best for themselves as sovereign adult human beings. Last Miranda grumpily writes, for the 500th time, there are other people here. There are other people asking questions. Is it possible for the subconscious mind to pick up negative messages that can't be heard while being awake? And what Thor character do you like? I don't give a fuck about Thor. I don't give a fuck about any of that shit. I like the one that is silent for eternity. Which one is that? Tell me which one that is. He's my favourite. or she's my favorite. No, that was a really good question. No, if you're asleep, you don't hear anything. They tried all that. I think that was part of the nasty stuff that they did with the MK Ultra project. Was one of the things they tried was psychic driving, where they would try playing messages to people while they slept. And once you're asleep, you're asleep. If there are horrible noises in the background, like I was discussing with my friend the other night, you know, if there's a couple and one of you is watching a horror movie and the other one goes to sleep and you can hear screams and monsters going roar in the background, then you might start having nasty dreams. But if somebody said, like, you can't learn French by playing French in the background. What Thor character do I like? God, I tried to watch. I've been to the cinema recently. I was so bored, and I went to see the last one. I thought the idea of Thanos, who is Thanatos, the king of the dead, was interesting-ish, but then kind of silly. Like, if you want to reduce the population of the universe by half, you don't have to randomly select all the living beings of a planet, take half of them and murder them. There are easier ways of getting that job done if you're an infinitely powerful godlike super being. So that was kind of stupid. I don't know. I think I've said this before. I was never a DC or Marvel guy. I think they're all nerds. I thought they were nerds when I was a kid. I read 2000 AD and I thought I was really cool reading that instead, because everybody in 2000 AD was, they were all broken and messy and, you know, weird outcast type characters. I actually caught some of Captain America yesterday. I think it was the first one. And as a film, I don't like that character, but as a film, I think, like, I was in a restaurant and I watched the preamble to right up to where he becomes Captain America, and then it was time for me to go. And I thought that was quite good, but I don't really like those films. Loud and daft things. Can hypnosis work on ADHD? My adult son is bipolar and can't take ADHD meds. I would try hypnotherapy for sure. But if he is bipolar and has ADHD, you can expect to be putting in quite a lot of work. There will be a good number of sessions that you'll need to do with a very, very good therapist. Have you gone through hypnotherapy? Yes. Was it effective? Yes. Can you hypnotize yourself? Yes, I can. Babu says, drugs and hypnosis are two types of surrendering the will. That sounds like a cool title for a dissertation, or like if you had a philosophy meetup and everybody's going to ponce around stroking their chins, that would be the title of it. I like that one. Psilocybin is more gentle, RG, says LCM. Hey, I would try it. I'm not saying I won't do it. I'm saying I don't recommend it for people who are seeking the healing from trauma. I mean, reduce your emotional flashbacks. That's increase your emotional literacy before you touch any psychedelic drug would be my advice, but I might do it. You know, I might give it a go. Shamanic guided ayahuasca. The reports back that I had about ayahuasca sounded kind of goofy to me. And I met a guy who believed that he was, I met him on a seminar in Texas, after the seminar in Texas, who clearly believed he'd been enlightened by ayahuasca. And he was like, oh yeah, it just really woke me up and changed my life. And I'm not the person I was anymore. And he's like, sat there on his laptop in a bar at 10:30 at night. And I'm like, oh wow, yeah, that sounds really cool. And then he started spouting pseudo enlightened non-dualistic garbage and finished it with, and let's talk about the ways in which you are actually me. And I was like, is this what ayahuasca did to you? Did it make you think that first year undergraduate philosophy concepts were somehow deeper meaningful? What the fuck, dude? So I got put off by ayahuasca the same way I got put off DMT, the people around it and the gibberish that was being spoken about it. I didn't believe the hype. And you know, there's people down in South America who every time something is good, people show up, tourists show up, and they just ruin it. The last thing I read about shamanically guided ayahuasca in South America, I think it was within a week, a tourist had killed the shaman because they believed the shaman had done something. And then another tourist killed his friend who was a tourist somewhere else in South America. And these things happened within a week of each other. I don't think I would go to South America. I'm going to South America in the not too distant future, but I don't think I would go down there and go, hey, I want to meet like a genuine shaman. Cause I think somebody local will just go, oh yeah, I'm totes a shaman. Totes. Give us your money. Drink this. You'll be fine. Was he the walrus? He was, yeah. Silent psychology says ultra spiritual people crack me up. Exactly. Exactly. There's some words there from a JP Sears fan. He was an ultra spiritual person. If I'd let him carry on talking, he was probably going to tell me about his workout regime and his flipping diet. I'm sure that's what I was going to come out. Though I hadn't asked him, that's what was going to come out of his mouth next. I was just like, oh, I need to go now. Okay. When you've done LSD already, the rest of the psychedelics kind of seem childish when it comes to the grip they have on you. That's what you say, Vastet. I have no idea. I was told that he's not a hippie, but he's a guy who grew, he's like in his late 60s. He's Californian. So he was coming up in the 60s and 70s, and he did a lot of drugs. And he went to an ayahuasca ceremony with his wife, who is a yoga teacher. I don't think she's done that much drugs, but she does a lot of yoga and meditation. And maybe the ceremony they went to wasn't very good. Maybe the drug wasn't mixed right, but they both said it was a very anemic experience. It wasn't. They were both like, yeah, we were tripping. So it's just not that much to it. I'll try it. If it comes into my zone and I feel good and I like the idea of doing it, I would try it. I just don't recommend it. Okay. What do you think about the black cube? Any questions about hypnosis from you guys? Okay, guys. I don't know what the black cube is. I'm sorry. Anticule 23. Jane Owen Squilks says, SIC, Module 8, self-hypnosis. What is that? I don't know what you're asking me, Jane. But if you're on the Silence the Inner Critic course, which clearly you are, I just sent out an email 40 minutes ago that will let you ask me a question for the live Q&A that I'm doing for the Silence the Inner Critic members tomorrow. So send me that. Just pad out the question. I don't really know what you're talking about there. Pad it out. Let me know what's going on and I'll answer it in the live Q&A tomorrow. Do you wear matching socks, Richard? Silent psychology. This is the one I'm going to end on. All of my socks are black by design. So I can never not be wearing matching socks. However, I have found recently that some are of a different height. Just let that sink in. Now that's deep. If he'd said that to me, I would have been like, this guy knows a thing or two. If he'd been like, I wear matching socks all the time, but some of them are a different shape, I would have been like, damn. All right, guys, thank you very much for the questions. I hope you enjoyed the hypnosis part earlier. As always, it's good fun chatting. And thanks for your time and your attention. And I look forward to speaking to you soon. Cheers. 50 shades of socks. Absolutely. I should have done the whole thing about socks now. I really regret just not calling it socks? All right, that's it. I'm out.